Hi, I'm Nick Rigoretti's, and this is the Jiu-Jitsu Brotherhood Podcast. The show for grapplers and martial artists that want to evolve both on and off the mat. Welcome back to the Jiu-Jitsu Brotherhood Show. I'm Nick Rigoretti's. This is episode number 39. And this week's guest is Mr. Fernando Yamasaki. He's one of Brazil's original exports to the United States. Really fun, friendly, and interesting guy with some cool stories. I know you're going to love the interview. Before we get to the interview, however, I just want to remind you guys that my new online jiu-jitsu dojo is now open. It's called the Master Academy. And I really believe that is one of the best online learning tools that you can get for your jiu-jitsu. If you head on over to jiu-jitsu masteracademy.com and use the coupon code podcast, you'll get 10% off any of the membership options. This is something I really believe is truly special, and it will help your jiu-jitsu improve. Keep in mind, we also have extra podcasts that you won't find anywhere else on the Master Academy. Also, don't forget to check out our sponsors, which are the Jiu-Jitsu Brotherhood store. You can head over to store.jiu-jitsubrother.com and get 10% off any of our apparel and our downloadable jiu-jitsu books and videos. Again, just use the code podcast at checkout and you'll get that discount. And then finally, if you're in the UK, make sure to check out our sponsors, Truth Naturals, who make some of the best CBD products on the market. If you use the coupon code JJBTRUTH, you'll get a discount on any of their really good CBD oils and balms and things of that nature, which will help with inflammation. So guys, also the last thing I wanted to mention is I know we have a lot of listeners out in California. I get a lot of messages from people out there, and some great news. I am going to be teaching two seminars in California coming up. By the time you hear this, they will be relatively soon. So the first one is on Saturday, the 21st, and that's at the Coachella Valley BJJ Academy. It's going to be a lot of fun. That is the place where a good friend of mine, Roy Dean, trains. Roy Dean and I have been buddies for about 3 or 4 years now, and we've developed a close friendship, even though we've never met before. This is going to be the first time he and I are going to meet in person. Super excited to meet him and to be teaching at the academy where he trains. He's one of the best instructors in the world, in my opinion, and just a very interesting, unique guy. So if you want to come along and meet Roy and myself, please do. All the info is going to be on the Jiu-Jitsu Brotherhood website. You just do a search for Jiu-Jitsu Brotherhood seminars and you'll find all the details. And then the second seminar I'm going to be teaching in California is at Subconscious BJJ in North Hollywood. And that will be on the 26th of April. So that's going to be a lot of fun. I know my buddy Joey Diaz is going to be there as well. He's super excited for it. It's just going to be a cool session. And again, if you want the information, it will be on the Jiu-Jitsu Brotherhood website. Just Google Jiu-Jitsu Brotherhood seminars and you'll find the page with all the seminar info. Cool, guys. Here is Mr. Fernando Yamasaki. Enjoy.
Hey, everyone. Welcome back to the Jiu-Jitsu Brotherhood show. I have a very cool sounding guest with me today. He's got the full-on Brazilian accent and everything. It's Fernando Yamasaki. Nice to meet you, Mr. Yamasaki. How are you doing?
My pleasure. I'm good. And you?
Yeah, I'm very well. I'm very well. So I'm going to be straight up with the audience. I don't know you, but one of the listeners contacted me and said, man, you've got to have this guy on the show. And he told me a little bit about you and you sounded cool. So I thought, let's give it a shot. And it's my understanding that you and your brother run a series of academies called the Yamasaki Academy out in the DC area. Is that right?
Right now, Mario lives in Brazil, or Mario lives in the airplane, right? Because he's a very busy man. Uh-huh. So the head here, the head instructors, me and my partner, Francisco Neto. Mm-hmm. So we are the one that leading the Yamasaki Academy here and throughout the world.
Oh, that's great. And you have quite a few academies now. It's like nine in the US, and you have in Sweden and some other places you mentioned.
Yeah, Brazil, Spain, Canary Island. We have spread around the world.
Wow, that's awesome. Now, tell me, can you just describe a little bit of how you came to be training in jiu-jitsu? It's my understanding that you were originally a judo practitioner. Is that right?
Yeah, so my father is one of the few red belts that they have in Brazil. So my father and my uncle, they started gym, judo school, 1956.
Wow.
So yeah, it's a long time ago. And then because of, you know, judo in Brazil is a very high level, I was trying to do something different to improve, right, my game. And then I said to my father, so I heard that there's a jiu-jitsu, it's a ground fighting. And back then it was maybe two schools in São Paulo, where I'm from. One of Gaston Gracie's school, another one, sorry, Pedro Emeterio, and then Otavio de Almeida Jr. So Otavio de Almeida Jr., I think was closer to me. So, and then a friend of my father was a Otavio de Almeida student. He came to me and said, Fernando, I'm going to take you there. So coincidentally, we used to teach in the same street. So one day he passed over my gym and took me to train to start a train with Master Otavio. And I used to go, you know, just a couple of times just to get the feeling what is a, was a, what it was jiu-jitsu about. And then
How old were you at this time?
I think I was 17, 16, 17.
Okay.
And then 1986, I was invited to participate in a jiu-jitsu tournament. When I went to the tournament, I didn't know the rules, so I thought it was, you know, fighting judo was and with submission. I ended up losing my bout, and then at the end of the tournament, Marcelo Benning arrived. So then, right, Marcelo Benning went there, submit everybody pretty easy, and then he invited people to try and spar with him, and I was the first one. So I end up, you know, sparring with Marcelo. And his jiu-jitsu was amazing. So next day, you know, I mean, on Monday, I said, man, I want to be your student. So that's when I started. I got hooked in 1996. And since then, you know, I didn't stop.
Wow, that's great. And so you, at the time when you started training with Marcelo Baron, you had your own judo school, or you were training at a judo school, and
Yes, we had the school, the family, that was a family business.
okay.
But I used to teach in some other places,
I see.
right? Just to increase my income. So, and that's what was one of the places that I used to teach to twice a week.
Okay, so you started training with Marcelo Baron after seeing how cool he was, and then what was the progression from there? How did you come to be in the United States?
So then I started to train with Marcelo, and the first time that I came to US was 89. I spent I think 9 months here, but I wasn't a national, no, on the wrestling national team.
Okay.
So I had to go back because there was a qualifying, I think there was a world championship in Tokyo. So then I came back to Brazil and I went back to jiu-jitsu training. You know, that's when you know, I went back to compete, training every day, regular basis, until Marcelo Baring passed away in 1994. So, but before that, I think around 1992, I started to teach jiu-jitsu at my own academy, I mean, the family academy in São Paulo.
Okay.
So my uncle was the head instructor, the judo head instructor, or my uncle was the owner of the school, and I was teaching at his school.
Okay, and then Marcelo passed away, but you were teaching at your uncle's school, and you were bringing some of the jiu-jitsu that you were learning from
From
Marcelo.
Marcelo,
Okay,
yes.
okay. And then you
So,
decided it was time to move to the States, or how did it go from
no,
there?
and then 2003, I decided to move because there was a you know, there was a booming of jiu-jitsu here going on, and I said, you know, it's time for me to try. So Neto was alone here, and Mario was on a granite business, very busy with the UFC. And then I said, you know, why not? So then, you know, I pack all my stuff, and here I am until now.
That's great. That's great. So who's better between you and Mario?
It depends in what.
I'm just kidding. It was a
In
trick.
business, Mario.
It was a trick question.
Street fighting Mario.
Okay. But jiu-jitsu
But
suits you.
different career because you know, when Mario came here to work, right? Mario has, you know, this business entrepreneur, you know, blood, which is I am more, you know, the fighter of the family.
Okay, that's great. That's cool.
So Mario's the money man. I'm the man on the mat. Mario's the CEO and I am the CFO.
Okay, got
it. Let's put this way.
I got it. So I'm interested. We just had a gentleman, you might be familiar with, Robert Drysdale, on the show.
Oh, yes.
Very, very cool guy. And he has been very influenced by the work of Roberto Pedrera. Are you familiar with Roberto Pedrera? The gentleman who wrote, I think it's pronounced Shocky. It's a book about the history of Jiu-Jitsu in Brazil. So Robert Drysdale has dedicated himself to studying the true history of Jiu-Jitsu in Brazil, and he's been flying to Brazil
and he's doing Japan. Documentary, correct?
Yes, that's correct. It's called
Close. Yeah, he just interviewed my father and my brother in Brazil.
Oh wow! So there you go. That's great to know. So I guess the question I have for you, Fernando, is, it seems to me, after speaking to Robert Drysdale and a few others, that the history of Jiu-Jitsu is, in Brazil in particular, is not exactly how it is presented to us by some of the existing power structures. Would you say that there's some truth to that?
Let me put it this way. If you read, you know, all the martial arts history, judo history, taekwondo, karate, they look similar. Mm-hmm. But you see they're pulling more towards their side than the other side.
Can you right? explain, can you explain a little bit more?
Let's say, if you read the taekwondo history, mm-hmm. and if you change the name for judo, it's the same history. It's the same story.
Okay.
If you look, you know, jiu-jitsu, if you look Aikido, it's all the same.
And what do you, right? what do you think that story
I think,
is? That
I some... think the tendency to you know, to make, let's say, if you're talking about Brazilian jiu-jitsu right now, uh-huh. of course the Gracie will tell, you know, they built everything, they did everything, everything happens the way they're telling. Mm-hmm. But I agree with you, you know, there are some things that they didn't do it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Could you give us some details?
Let's say, do you know who did who helped to do the first Pan American championship?
I don't.
Who made the championship? I did.
Oh, okay.
Do you see my name there? No. If it wasn't for me, the competition wouldn't happen.
Okay.
Because when we sat down to build the brackets, was already maybe 7 p.m. So oh. they're cutting all the names in papers, they're folding, they're shaking over their hands to make the brackets. So I said, you guys are crazy. This is not going to happen. We're going to stay here for 2 days just doing the brackets.
Uh-huh.
And I opened my folder and said, look, I have the Olympic format here to do the brackets.
Okay.
And then I have to explain to them, but when I say that I'm explaining, for the audience to get the feeling, mm-hmm. people were screaming, trying to beat me up, trying to fight. And Carson Gracie came on my back and said, everybody shut up. Let Yamazaki talk.
Great.
Well, yes, because, you know, you have to be macho, right? And then I explained to Carson, he said, that's the way they're going to do it. Everybody shut up now. And everybody respect Carson, of course.
Uh-huh.
Everybody quiet. If somebody says something here, you guys are going to be in trouble with me. Let them work. And then me, Master Otavio Jr., and my brother. Mm-hmm. So we started to do the brackets. And I remember people on my back saying, hey, you're going to manipulate the bracket. You know, I don't want my fighter fighting with this guy. I said, look, I don't know your fighter. I know your name. I know who you are, but I don't know your fighter. I have no reason to manipulate the bracket. So just let me do it. Mm-hmm. So then I do it. So we spend maybe 5 hours doing the brackets.
Okay.
And that's the story of the first Pan Ams.
Wow. Interesting. I mean, yeah. I personally hate going to jiu-jitsu competitions, even today in the modern era with all the computerized brackets and everything. So I cannot imagine how crappy that must have been to be at one of those.
Let me tell you something else. Weight in. at the Pan Ams. The first one's in Florida. I think the third one was in Florida. So the weigh-in was on Conan's school, mm-hmm. the MMA coach. Mm-hmm. When I got there, there was a line. Maybe it was 1,000 people in the line. It took 8 hours for them to wait everybody under the sun. Can you imagine that?
Unbelievable.
One scale to check everybody's weight.
Unbelievable.
Yeah. And then you're complaining about now?
I remember one of the first competitions I did in London. When I first arrived in London, I was a white belt or a blue belt, and I went to this jiu-jitsu competition. It was in a little hall, a sports hall somewhere. And the guy organizing it, a really cool guy. I didn't like him in the beginning, but I subsequently realized he's a cool guy. I remember I paid the registration fee and did the weigh-in, and then I wanted to get warmed up. So I said to him, like, hey, bud, where's the warm-up mats? And he just looked at me and he said, what do you mean warm-up mats? And I was like, well, we're going to be fighting on the ground and I want to do some stretching and get my body ready to fight. And he's like, he just looked at me like I was a crazy gringo trying to make trouble, and I just wanted to warm up.
But have you been to Brazil, Tijuca Tennis Clube,
where
they used to host?
Yeah, I fought in the Mundials once there in the tennis club many years ago.
All right, where's the warm-up area?
It's true, right? It's true.
On the bathroom, right? Maybe on the toilet, the dirty bathroom, right?
It's
floating water, right?
Yeah.
So that's it.
Yeah, and then the guys.
So nowadays, jiu-jitsu is a luxury. The competition is pretty easy.
Exactly. What do you feel have been the biggest changes in jiu-jitsu since maybe like the late 80s, early 90s? And, you know, for me, it seems like we're approaching a level where I found it very interesting. The last time I went to the World Championships, I got there and it looked like I was at a professional sports tournament, like there was, you know, big electronic displays and speakers announcing things, and there were like there was an expo with people selling clothes, and it seemed like, wow, there's a proper industry and a proper level of professionalism. And in a way, that's cool. And in a way, I miss kind of the grassroots, more raw, more real, the way it
used to be. Yeah, it's the evolution of the sport, right? I would say, you know, back in the days, we have a TV that we need to change the channel. Nowadays, we have remote control, or you can talk, the TV will change the channel for you. So that's the evolution. And, you know, it's very professional nowadays. And I really like it, because you know what time you're going to be competing.
Mm-hmm.
You know when you're going to weigh in yourself. They're going to measure your gi. It's going to be fair for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
Very professional.
Okay.
Right? So
yeah.
I remember at the Pan Ams 2000, that I got there 8 a.m. in the morning, and I left the venue 5 a.m. in the morning. So my student was the last bout. So they start to turn off the lights. They start to turn off the AC and things like this. So one thing for the record here, the federation could host two competitions in the same place because we got kicked out because of the bad behavior.
Mm-hmm.
So nowadays, everybody is professional. People understood, you know, you can make money out of jiu-jitsu. You can get sponsorship. It's becoming more and more professional. There's a lot of professional competitions, mm-hmm. right? So it can be a way of living now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's good to know. So, I mean, speaking of more and more competitions and different things happening, you know, I'm kind of fishing here for a little bit of an exciting story. I'll understand if you don't want to speak about it, but it's my understanding that you became involved with a different federation that did sport jiu-jitsu in Europe.
Oh, yes.
Is that correct?
Yeah.
And
yes. I brought it to Brazil.
So this is jiu-jitsu with strikes. Is that right?
Yeah. So this is the jiu-jitsu that's going to be in the Olympics. This is the jiu-jitsu that was organized in Europe. Through government, through the International Olympic Committee.
Okay.
And the structure is very powerful, and versus IBJJF, it's a company. So it's two different things. And people that has a dream to one day compete at the Olympics, I don't see a way that be under IBJJF flag. It has to be under the JJIF, Jiu-Jitsu International Federation.
Okay.
So they have three different competition. The fighting system, which is strikes, just punches and blows, no knees, no elbows. And then once you grab on the gi, you can do throws and takedowns. And then when you take to the ground, you can do like a judo, you can immobilize your opponent and you can use submissions.
Okay.
And then the second is the dual system. It's more like a self-defense choreography, which is very beautiful to look, but no efficiency. And then the third one that they include, maybe 5 years ago, they called Newaza, which is a ground fighting. So they cannot use the name of Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. They changed for the Japanese name of Newaza, which is the Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu rules. So that's the everybody is going to be competing under. The Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu people were competing under.
So, I mean, I have so many questions and a couple of opinions as well. Like the first thing that that comes to mind, I see a lot of people, they want Jiu-Jitsu in the Olympics, right? Or they say it's going to happen. And I personally think that there's no way it's going to happen. Reason being is that the Judo Federation is such a big part of the Olympics, and the Judo Federation is not going to let that happen because Judo and Jiu-Jitsu are too similar. And the second reason is that, if we're honest, Jiu-Jitsu is not very pleasing to watch unless you're a very, very, unless you have a lot of understanding and a lot of expertise and you know exactly what's going on. So it's one thing for the average person to watch a big throw happen on TV. They see a big Ippon and they're like, wow, Judo's cool. This is exciting. But they don't understand what De La Hiva guard or deep half guard or like the whatever, like some weird back mount attack. They don't understand what those things are. So what would you say to that? Like if to my opinion that judo, Jiu-Jitsu is never going to be in the Olympics in any form.
It will through JJIF. It will.
Okay.
It will.
You sound very confident.
Yes, I am. It will. Because I participate just to give you an idea, 1998, 1997, they have a parallel games from the Olympics. They call World Games.
Okay.
And I competed. So that's the preparation for the federation to become Olympics. So just to give you an idea, parachuting, tug of war, skating, hockey, surfing. So they were competing on the same bowling, right? They were competing on the same World Games. And some of these sports now, they're Olympian sports.
Okay. Yeah. I mean,
so
that sounds
that
cool.
Was the change. And Jiu-Jitsu is already there. So I think, again, if Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu people, fans, competitors, wants to be part of the Olympic family, it will be through the JJIF.
Yeah, look, to me, I think it would be cool, and I hope it'll happen. I don't think it will happen, basically because of judo, and because, as I said, Jiu-Jitsu is maybe difficult to watch for the uninitiated. But I hope I'm proven wrong. I really do.
Yes, I think will happen. I think it will happen, but it's going to take years. But we're going to see Jiu-Jitsu in the Olympics because judo cannot stop. Like the same as wrestling. I think karate is going to be in Tokyo, right? So, and I don't know if you know, judo almost got banned a couple times from the Olympics.
I didn't know that. No, could you
Yeah,
tell me a little bit more
my
about that?
father had to be. My father is a he was a referee, right, from judo. And then when they have meetings, do you know judo? They have color gis, correct?
Colored geese, is
White
that
and
right?
blue.
Yes, yeah, I did know that, yeah.
So back in the days, there was only white geese with a red belt around your waist. So, and this is was one of the changes proposed to the Olympic Committee to hold judo at the Olympics. Another thing was before brown belts was allowed to compete in the Olympics. Now only black belts can compete on the Olympics.
Oh, okay.
So they change rules, they manipulate a lot of things to be able to keep judo in the Olympics to be more attractive. And you
Okay.
mentioned something interesting, which is jiu-jitsu. It's not fun to watch through the TV, right? And the Olympics is all about holding people in front of the TV or the computer. That's why judo is made for the audience and jiu-jitsu is made for us. So that's why jiu-jitsu attracts a lot of young people and a lot of cool people, you know, all the fashion people goes to jiu-jitsu and judo athletes, this a small community, because it's not attractive to the crowd.
I
So
know,
that's my comparison.
I interesting, yeah. So, I just come this is something I this is the main one of the main things that I wanted to get your opinion on, or to hear your side of the story. And so it's my understanding that when you started to become involved with the Sport Jiu-Jitsu Federation, which please remind me of the name again, Fernando,
JJIF?
JJIF, when you became
Yes.
involved with the excuse me,
JJIF.
JJIF, it's my understanding Carlos Gracie was not impressed at all, and he
He
called
was
you
mad.
the traitor of jiu-jitsu. Is that correct?
Yes. Actually, I had this letter in my hand yesterday, and I was laughing because when I start to invite people, you know, the first time I took Jacaré, Romero Cavalcanti, I took Marcelo Melo, which his nickname is Tello, Fabio Gurgel, to compete in 1993 in Denmark. So when we came back and he find out that I took a lot of people from Jiu-Jitsu to compete on this organization, I received a fax that he called me the traitor of Jiu-Jitsu, that I was using the Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu name or the Gracie family, whatever, to take the advantage and mislead people and what is the real jiu-jitsu.
Wow. And
Yeah.
I mean, obviously that upset you to hear
No, I didn't care, you know.
that.
And then he came to my house. Him and Master Naum Habay, another master from Naum Habay, was a direct student from Gaston Gracie. Or George Gracie, I mean, George Gracie. And he was sent to the countryside of São Paulo to teach jiu-jitsu. So they came to my house to put pressure on me to understand what I was doing. And one thing that I like it, you know, I could have this conversation with him. I explained the rules and the difference in the sport. And that led him to build the federation, the Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu Federation,
Wow.
the Confederação Brasileira de Jiu-Jitsu.
And
That's
that's
why.
CBFF or CBJF, is that
No,
right?
CBJ,
CBJ,
CBJJ,
sorry, yeah, okay.
CBJJ, yes. So when he found that, when he found the federation, I was the only school outside the Gracie Academy, the Barra Gracie, invited to participate on the first Pan Ams. So, and then we came to Los Angeles 1994 for the first Pan Ams. And then that's when we start to build the Pan Ams. And then on the World Championship, the first one, I helped organize that as well. So I was in charge to bring people from outside Brazil to compete. So I had a Cuban guy, I had a Japanese guy, and I brought a Dutch guy, Remco Pardoe, the guy that fought Royce Gracie. I don't know if you remember.
Yeah, I remember him well, yeah.
So here's the one that I brought from.
That's cool. And
Yes.
so basically you left things on a good level with Carlos Gracie. Is that correct?
Always, you know, he's a smart man. He's a smart businessman. You know, fighting against, you know, me that, you know, I wouldn't stop, you know, doing what I was doing. My father is a lawyer. When he started, you know, the threatening me, I said, "Look, this is against the law. You can do whatever you want. You know, I'm not doing anything incorrect. So I have the freedom to decide what sport that I what I want to do it,
Yeah,
right? And you have the
definitely.
freedom to do your own sport, so you can't stop me. So we better work together." So then that's what we did.
That's yeah, I respect that you stood up for yourself, and I think there needs to be more of that in jiu-jitsu. There's a lot of people who will just do whatever because the powers that be tell them to, you know, and I do respect that you took a stand. So the last thing I want to ask you about, Fernando, I don't have any other details except Sean, the person who introduced us, said I have to talk to you about dojo storming. So I'm hoping you're going to be able to fill in what he means by
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, I don't know which dojo stormer he's talking about, but back
that.
in the days, you know, it was common.
Uh-huh.
You know, because when the jiu-jitsu people start to hear more and more about jiu-jitsu, let's talk about, you know, 30, 25 years ago that there was no internet and everything happens through TV, newspaper, or magazine, right?
Yeah.
So then that's when we start to have a specific martial arts magazine. And we start to see more and more jiu-jitsu on the cover of the magazine, on articles and things like this. So to get the name of jiu-jitsu out, we start to say, you know, the jiu-jitsu is the most efficient martial art, and people start to get upset.
Okay.
And I understand that, you know, because back, I don't know if you're familiar, but back in the days, you know, a lot of martial arts schools in the same neighborhood. And then when the student used to come and say, "Hey, but what about the karate school right on the corner?" And people used to say bad things about the karate school, right? "Oh, you know, my martial arts is more efficient." I think that's it's a culture in martial arts. And then we start to say, "Look, if they think they're better than us, tell them to come here, we'll fight them.
Great.
Or we can go there anytime and fight them." That's how Horian started. And people used to come across, you know, come to my gym. I remember a guy, huge guy, he came to my gym and said, "Look, I just came from Okinawa. I was training. I could see his knuckle, you know, all calluses and stuff." I said, "Okay." And then he opened his guard, opened his chest, and said, "You can punch me." And then I started to punch him very hard. And he was not moving. I said, "Oh, I think I'm in trouble here." And then he says, "Oh, now I'm going to start to strike you back." I said, "If you try, I'm going to do jiu-jitsu on you." I said, "Let's do it." So back in the days, I was 114 pounds. I believe this guy was about 200 pounds. So I took him down. I mounted on him, I slapped his face and armbar him. So I said, "Listen, man, I'm gonna break your arm. You better tap." So he tapped, he stood up again, he said, "Let's do it again." I said, "Man, I'm gonna hurt you now." He said, No, this time is gonna be different." So I took him down, took his back, choked him out, woke him up, and he stood back again and said, "Man, I need to wrestle myself in this school." I said, "Okay, I just got a new student." And
That I love that. I love those kinds of stories. I can't imagine it happening today, and it's probably a good thing because I mean, as much as I love jiu-jitsu and it's what I do, it's what I teach, jiu-jitsu is not the most efficient martial art anymore. MMA is the most efficient martial art. And I mean, if a tough, well-disciplined, well-trained MMA fighter challenges the average plain jiu-jitsu fighter, the same thing's going to happen. The jiu-jitsu fighter is going to get beat up. He's going to
Yes.
try to pull guard or something, and he's just going to get ground and pounded, or he's going to get slammed or whatever, or knocked out with strikes. So it's kind of. It's weird that jiu-jitsu created this, but now jiu-jitsu is actually lucky that that doesn't happen anymore, in my opinion.
I mean, to me, 101 is still efficient. Out of the all martial arts that we have on the market, I do believe in jiu-jitsu. And that's why, I think if you can add some striking, if you can be smart enough to maintain the distance, if people, I think the way I learned jiu-jitsu, the old school jiu-jitsu, that for you to get, to a new level, to a new belt, you have to train Vale Tudo in your school, the open hand kind of EBI with the strikes, right? So that's how I train. So I think that's the closest that you can get to a street fight. That's the closest that you can get, to a self-defense situation. And I believe if we bring that back, I think jiu-jitsu can be very efficient. If you
Yeah,
want
I
to compare
agree.
to MMA, of course, MMA is more specific. I agree with you. But jiu-jitsu is still, reliable, right?
Definitely.
A reliable martial art.
And not many people, training MMA is so difficult on the body, and it's like a young man's game, like it just, if you go and you put the gloves on and you do full on MMA sparring, it's going to break you down so quickly. You're not going to be able to do that for very long. Whereas jiu-jitsu, you still get like, let's say 75 or 80% of the efficiency, as you say, but with much less punishment on the body. So, I still think
Yeah, that's what
jiu-jitsu.
I tell everybody. That's why jiu-jitsu is very exciting, because you can go 100% against your training partner, and tomorrow we're going to go back to the gym. If I get with my partner on a Muay Thai training and I go 100%, so we're going to go to the hospital.
Exactly. Well, Fernando, it has been a great pleasure to talk to you. I really enjoyed it. If the rest of the listeners want to get in touch with you or want to find out more about what you do, is there a website that they should go to?
They can go to grappling.com.
Oh, nice.
They will find me there.
That's a
They
cool
can contact
domain
me
name.
to the web page. Oh, yes.
Yeah,
That's
good
an
one.
old one.
Nice.
And
Fernando, thank you so much for your time. I really do appreciate it, my friend.
I hope to see you on the mat one day.
For
We
sure,
need
my
to train
brother.
together.
For sure, my
All
brother.
right?
Okay, blessings on you, Fernando.
Let
Bye-bye.
us.
Yeah, there's something cool about that guy. You can hear in his voice that he's just one of those playful, real, cool dudes. And I really enjoyed speaking to him. I think it's important to, jiu-jitsu, like pretty much anything else in this world, there's this tendency for us to always be looking for the flashiest, newest, like hot new trend. Whether it's like, I don't know, I was going to say Mendes Brothers, but even they aren't that anymore. There's always like a new upcoming set of techniques or a new jiu-jitsu training star or whatever, and we always get focused on that. But sometimes these old school dudes have got some really cool stuff, and not just techniques and things to teach, but like these amazing stories of what it was like back in the day. And at the roots of the art. So I think that they deserve our respect and our attention. And I, for one, would definitely like to chat to not only Fernando, but others like him again soon. Okay, guys, hope you have a great week. Peace out.